Today's episode of Expanded Perspectives is sponsored by Gaia.com. Help find your own truth by exploring perspectives you won't find in the mainstream on some of life's biggest mysteries. Whether it's grand conspiracies, breakaway societies, UFOs, ancient civilizations, lost wisdom, as well as the paranormal, all at your fingertips. Stream videos anywhere from your living room or on the go with the Gaia app, available through the App Store or Google Play.
You'll have access to over 7,000 titles, all available to you with a monthly plan for only $9.95 a month. If you sign up now, your first month is only 99 cents. There are multiple plans to choose from, including a three-month plan and an annual plan. Gaia has one-of-a-kind shows like Truth Hunter, Buzzsaw, Cosmic Disclosure, Beyond Belief, Missing Links, Hidden Origins, and Deep Space, Unearthing Nazca, and False Flags.
Gaia is available on your Android or iPhone, Roku, Apple TV, and Amazon Fire TV. If you enjoy expanding your perspective, then you'll enjoy Gaia.com. GAIA.com/expandedperspectives. All one word, GAIA.com/expandedperspectives. Howdy out there, everybody, and thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives. You're riding along with me, Cam Hale, and I've got somebody new in studio today, folks. I've got somebody sitting in, sitting across the table from me. It is such a privilege to announce I have Dynamic Disc's newest player signed to their whole thing. I have Kyle Wysocki.
How's it going, everybody? It's Labor Day here in the States. But I'm glad to be here in studio with my brood, Cam, and all of you great listeners out there. Yeah, I bit the bullet. For months now, Cam's been trying to get me to go out on the disc golf tour with him. And I've just been too busy. But now that school's started, the kids are back in school, I have a little bit of free time. Mm-hmm. I've been talking to Cam and my wife privately about this for weeks now, saying, you know what? I need an activity to get outside. I need something. I don't care if it's hiking, mountain climbing, you know, bike riding. I need something because mm-hmm. I'm either in my studio or I'm in the office working or I'm in my car, but I'm not getting enough physical activity outside.
And you don't get other than baseball. No, but that's not enough. You're not playing the game. You're exactly. Just out coaching and getting it going. Yeah,
exactly. So I've been looking for something. And now that I got a little bit more free time, numerous of my friends play with Cam. So finally I was like, you know what? I was watching YouTube videos like everybody does. And I, for whatever reason, I was trying to think of something to watch and I couldn't decide. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to check out some of this disc golf tournaments. So I found one and I started watching it and that clicked to another episode and then another one. 3 hours later, I'm like, this looks like a lot of fun. I think I'm going to give it a try. So I went and bought some and I went out with Cam the other day. And I have to tell you what, man, it is a lot of fun. If you've never tried disc golf, it is entertaining.
Yeah, I've got him converted, folks. I took him. We did a little field work. I got my basket out. I had Kyle was throwing. We threw at the basket for about 2.5 hours.
and he was loving it. And we're like, okay, we're done. We're going to go home and do some stuff. And on the way home from the field work, he goes, I'll be by to grab you in a couple hours. We're going to go play around. I was like, I knew it. I knew it. And sure enough. Yeah, that was the...
It was fun.
The fourth round I played this weekend, I guess.
Yeah, you'd play like crazy, though.
This weekend, I went hard in the paint. Played a bunch this weekend.
My arm's a little sore because I think when I first started, I was trying to throw it super hard, and in reality, you don't need to.
Yeah, yeah, you just gotta. But it's just fun. Technique.
It was fun.
It was. We had me and him had a wonderful time out there, except for the mosquitoes. I think I've got the West Nile and the Zika and malaria and all that kind of good stuff.
They were terrible. There was a worst time when me and you were hunting in Colorado. Remember that
was bad.
Jesus,
I forgot about that on an antelope hunt up in Colorado.
Yeah, well, let's get into the news, Cam. You said you had an interesting sighting.
I have a wonderfully interesting sighting coming from our friends at Cryptozoology News. Folks, click over there, put money in my pocket. No, this isn't my side as much as Kyle likes everybody to believe it is. A woman claims a Bigfoot sighting in Washington. This is Mallow. Mallow, Washington. She's from Ferry County. She says that she saw a primate that she identifies as a Bigfoot. Now, she's a 60-year-old woman. She wanted to be completely anonymous, but she was by Empire Creek Road near Mallow, she says, when the creature showed up. And this is what she quoted saying, "We lived in a small house that we were building." And she said that the fall of 1993 is when this encounter took place, that it was around 6 a.m., and there was just enough light, of course, to see. Now, she went on to report that the first thing that she noticed was that her dogs were barking at something at the corner of the place.
Right.
She says, right where the creek ran through. She goes, then the dogs came running back to the house with their hair up, and that they wouldn't leave the front porch. So, you're kind of like, what did they, you know, you're thinking at this point, if it's your dogs too, you're like, what did they see?
Yeah,
so,
what's out there?
Yeah. So, she goes, I think I'm going to go investigate it. You know what they say about curiosity and that cat, folks? So, she goes over there, and she said, that's when she noticed someone standing by a tree. She says, I thought, what or who is that? And I could see that it was very tall. Now, she describes an 8-foot-tall creature with dark hair. And its head, she says, was smaller than its shoulders. Well, I hate to be the bearer of bad news, folks, but everybody's head's a little smaller than their shoulders. That's just the way.
For most people, yeah.
Well, exactly. But she said it had no neck.
Oh, so it was like you.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. She says, we made eye contact. Then it took a step back and I couldn't see him, but I knew he was there. Now, she said when she turned her head to yell at her husband to come see it, she claims the creature had vanished, but they were able to find footprints. Now, she got in contact with BFRO investigator Daryl Verney, and she said that she felt frightened at the time, but that it is an unforgettable story, and she now feels very fortunate to have seen one of these creatures. Now, 3 years later, there in Washington, another resident had placed an emergency call claiming that a bipedal creature had broken onto his property. And then, of course, it was later released to the public by the law enforcement, the 911 call.
So a lot of activity in that area.
Yeah. And some good disc golf courses, too.
Oh, yeah. Pretty cool. Check this out. Astronaut Peggy Whitson returns after 9.5 months in space. She touched down on Saturday night in Kazakhstan at 9:21 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and she departed Earth just a few days after Donald Trump was elected president of the United States. In the interim, she's been merely tweeting down about her exercise regimen, her space fashions, her space cooking, and space toilet upkeep. She was actually supposed to return in June, but when an extra seat opened up on the Soyuz, she jumped at the chance to stay in orbit an extra 3 months. She is, however, very eager to return to flushable toilets, it says. And she says, trust me, you don't want to know the details. Now, she's broken record after record, most significantly, that a total of 665 days in space, she spent the most time in space of any woman and any American astronaut. She's at age 57, and she's also the world's oldest female astronaut. Now, NASA notes that over the course of these 4,623 orbits, that she and her crewmates contributed to research to the effects of microgravity on human eyes and their own stem cells. They also conducted an antibody investigation that could increase the effectiveness of chemotherapy drugs for cancer treatments and the study of plant physiology and growth in space using an advanced plant habitat. She told the Associated Press that the 9 months at the International Space Station went by very quickly because I was so busy. And she said she writes on to looking down on the planet from on high. Now, when the quote, she says, "I will miss seeing the enchantedly peaceful limb of our earth from this vantage point. Until the end of my days, my eyes will always search the horizon to see that curve once again." So that's pretty cool, man. That is an incredibly long time to be in space. And like we've talked about it numerous times, when you finally get back to Earth, man, you're out of it for a couple months because of the atrophy and things.
That sounds like a conspiracy theory, what she just said.
Oh, yeah, about the curvature of the Earth?
We'll always search the horizon for that curve once again. She's trying to let everybody know it's not flat, but it is, and she knows it's flat.
Yeah, so very interesting. The oldest... Yeah, please don't plant that seed. Please stop. Stop. Every time we get dozens of emails. Hold on, I'm going to cash this flat Earth shield check, and I'm going to go get me some new discs this afternoon.
That's right.
Right? Because they pay me to keep it going.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but very cool, man.
That is... You know what I've wondered, and I don't know why I've never thought of this. I've never looked into this, none of this, until this very moment when you're telling this story, is when you're on whatever the space station and all that, how do you get your sleep pattern regulated? Do you think the lights actually have a time where they shut off?
I would imagine.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you're going around the Earth, I don't know, 20 times a day.
You could easily get completely out of rhythm and not even know that you were staying up way late or not sleep. You know what I'm saying?
What was a giant mayfly?
Looks like a mayfly got in the studio. Just it's on me. It looks like it's a thunderbird circling. Look out!
Look out!
It almost landed in my beard. If that thing lands in my beard, you're gonna have to edit this out because I'm gonna lose my mind. I will go crazy. But yeah, just the sleep patterns, the whole thing.
That's a good question.
You know what I mean? I need to look into that. I got you something here from Open Minds. You're gonna really enjoy. There was a Florida couple claimed to have witnessed a speedy UFO zigzagging through the night sky. I didn't think about this, but it's around the time we were down there. Now it's not where we were at. Now the couple was in Ormond-by-the-Sea, Florida, and reports that they saw a bright object flying in this zigzaggy, as they called it, through the sky at a high rate of speed. Now it took place on August 13th as they were watching the stars from their backyard. Now the husband says he was a military brat and he served 14 years in the U.S. Army. But he goes on to say that he has never seen anything like what he witnessed. Now, here's what he says. This is his statement verbatim. Here's his statement. "My wife and I were outside in the backyard looking at the stars because the sky was unusually clear. We had been observing the stars and constellations for approximately 5 minutes when the object appeared suddenly out of the west and then headed east out over the ocean. There is this extremely fast, at extremely high altitude, brightly white-lit object that transit the sky in less than 10 seconds, stops, remained motionless for a few seconds, then flew southwest back inland, making erratic movements, kind of jittery and zigzaggy, then abruptly stopped again and remained motionless." Goes on to say that the speed was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
"The object then flew south by southwest until it was lost in the illumination or glow of the city lights of Daytona Beach." Now he goes on to say here that "I was an Air Force brat and a veteran of 14 years military service in the U.S. Army. I've seen all types of high-performance military aircraft flying. This was not a plane or satellite. Never seen anything remotely this fast. It made erratic changes in direction and complete stops, with no perceivable slowing." Now it says, "I'm actually a very rational person, a highly trained and experienced observer. I've seen the ISS, the space shuttle, fighters fueling from tankers, high-performance aircraft, and numerous satellites over the years, but never anything like this. At first we were excited, as we thought it was a satellite. Then our feelings turned to awe as we watched it perform incredible maneuvers, radically changing direction, coming to abrupt stops, all from very high rates of speed." He goes on to say this, "Bright single points of light moving erratically in the night sky are often reported. Satellites can often be seen at night, especially in the hours just after sunset. However..."
Yeah, I've seen them multiple times.
Mm-hmm. "Says, however, satellites are not very fast and just fly in straight lines."
That's true.
So... you start looking at this, but yet what he was talking about, the way it flew out over the ocean, then flew back inland, but it was doing its crazy maneuvers out over the ocean.
Yeah.
"Lends me to believe that it's ours, and that's a test area. In case something goes wrong, you splash down in the ocean. It's lost. It's not doing it over the city.
Right.
It's not doing over something like that. And then when you get concluded with what you're doing, you zip back over, fly back over, And then that's the way
to your base and land. Yeah, could be. Or it could be a USO.
Yeah, it could be. But he didn't. I don't know. This whole thing just I've evolved. Like I said, well, now I feel like it's ours that we have constructed some of this stuff now, and that we're trying all these things, and maybe we're really, really good at it. We're just not going to ever release any of it.
Maybe you're right. And speaking of aliens, a breakthrough listening project actually tracked a strange series of 15 radio bursts.
Ooh.
Are you familiar with the program called Breakthrough Listen? It's a $100 million initiative aimed at stepping up the search for alien signals. And it says it's picked up an intriguing series of 15 fast radio bursts emanating from a dwarf galaxy 3 billion light years away. It's way too early, it says, to claim that these signals from that galaxy are extraterrestrial, but it's in a source, and it's called this, Cam, get out your pen, FRB-12-1102. And this is what this company, much like SETI, has been doing, is they've been tracking this stuff, and they found it. But they said that... they're not sure if it's extraterrestrial or not. It's too early to make any claims towards that, but it very well could be. It says the radio emissions were detected by the Green Bank Telescope in West Virginia on August 26th during a five-hour-long series of 30-minute scans that were conducted as part of the Breakthrough Listen campaign. Now, 12 of the blips were recorded during the first scan, and three more came during the second scan. The eight subsequent scans turned up nothing further. The results were reported Monday evening to the Astronomer's Telegram in a news release. Now, Breakthrough Listen said the findings also will be laid out in an upcoming scientific paper. FRB-12-1102 was discovered 5 years ago in a constellation, and astronomers already knew that it was a source of repeated fast radio bursts, or FRBs. That's why Breakthrough Listen added the source to its list of targets for observation. Now, Andrew Simeon, who's director of the Berkeley SETI Research Center and the Breakthrough Listen program, said in a recent news release, whether or not fast radio bursts turn out to be signatures of extraterrestrial technology, Breakthrough Listen is helping to push the frontiers of a new and rapidly growing area of understanding about our universe around us. Now, the most important question is, you know, this cause of radio emissions, is it a neutron star or could it be something? Now, they claim directed energy beams from an extraterrestrial source. They're not sure. So, basically, they found some strange signals in space, and they don't know what's causing it. It could either be a star, or it could be a space fleet of extraterrestrials. They do not know. But they know that they've been finding these signals, and it turns out they've been finding a lot more signals from different places in the solar system. But, you know, most of them are created by these neutrons or, I guess, suns exploding on themselves, things like that. But
In
either case, it's very interesting. Every day there seems to be new discoveries in outer space. Very cool. Also, speaking of very cool, after the break, folks, I'm going to be talking about some giants. Stick with us, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. Throughout many cultures, from many different places throughout the world, there have long been legends of giants living among us. Colossal beings that our ancestors saw, followed, and some of them even worshipped. There have been giant copper-crowned skeletons found in numerous places all over North America. There have been giant skeletons and even giant swords found deep within the Fertile Crescent of what was one time Mesopotamia. There are numerous tales and stories, some of which are included in the Bible. Yet your average person isn't even aware that such things once existed on this planet. Most believe it's a myth, a fairy tale, unaware of the actual physical specimens that have been found. Even here, in North America, some of the tribes of early Native Americans talk about the giants that once roamed the countryside. In fact, some of the tribes talk of great battles between the two very different groups. There have been many theories as to where these stories come from, if they are in fact real, or just elaborate fakes. And just like any good fisherman's tale, through the retelling and telling of these stories, of course the size of said skeleton gets larger and larger. One of the most sensational claims of its time was made on a tiny island lying just off the coast of California. And the question is, was this land once roamed by real giants? Lying just off the coast of the United States, state of California, around 22 miles southwest of Los Angeles, is the quaint Santa Catalina Island. Also, called simply Catalina Island, the 22-mile by 8-mile island is part of the Channel Islands archipelago and incorporated into Los Angeles County, and it also has a rather colorful history. It was originally settled by the Gibralino and Tongva Native Tribe Americans in around 7000 BC. The island was later claimed by Spain in 1542, and it later passed into the possession of Mexico, and after that, eventually to the United States. Catalina Island was long used as a base of operations for a variety of shady characters, including pirates, smugglers, and even otter poachers, until it was eventually turned into a tourist resort in the 1920s by the tycoon William Wrigley Jr. of the Chewing Gum Empire, and the person who the world champion Chicago Cubs field is named after. Yeah, I know, that has nothing to do with the story, but any time I can mention that the Cubs are world champions, well, I'm going to. Back to the story. Although the island is now a popular tourist destination and frequently visited by vacationers from nearby Los Angeles, which lies only about an hour's boat ride away, there is another odd facet of the island's history that most people may be unaware of. In 1896, a 15-year-old boy named Ralph Glidden moved to Catalina Island with his family, where he would go on to find work as a carpenter before developing a more than serious interest in the various Indian artifacts that he found there, like pot shards, arrowheads, and the many burial sites to be found scattered about the Channel Islands after he reportedly stubbed his toe on a human skull while out looking for pearls on San Nicolas Island. He became obsessed, and he became obsessed with such things that he decided to become an amateur archaeologist. He decided to start going on and organizing numerous excavations to uncover some of these ancient burial sites on Catalina Island between the years of 1919 in 1928. During these excursions, he uncovered an alleged 800 secret burial sites around the island and a myriad of Indian artifacts and relics as well. He also found thousands of ancient native remains, which he often sold to museums and collectors. When William Wrigley Jr. bought the island in the 1920s, he went about ensuring that these artifacts would be preserved and ordered that all such finds would be the exclusive property of the Field Museum of Natural History in Chicago. Interestingly enough, though, the Hay Foundation, to whom Glidden had sold a large amount of such remains and relics, was contracted by the museum to carry out all excavations on Catalina Island, and he managed to snag a top spot in this pursuit, which enabled him to keep his excavations uninhibited. Unfortunately for Glidden, in 1924, the foundation cut all funding, and he was forced to keep his head above water by opening a ramshackle museum for his own finds in the town of Avalon, which is located on Catalina Island, which he called the Catalina Museum of Island Indians. And this is where he exhibited some of his discoveries to anyone willing to pay admission. The whole museum was a rather grim and gruesome affair, utilizing Indian skeletons as decorations and upping the spooky factor. But it worked, and that it drew slews of curiously seeking people as he amassed a giant collection of his own. it could all be seen in retrospect as rather exploitive, turning these priceless treasures from the past into macabre exhibitions for the curious and making money off them. But you have to remember, this was a different time. People didn't think the same way they do now. But by all accounts, Glidden was actually quite serious about the scientific pursuit of archaeology. And in those days, this sort of behavior was sort of par of the course concerning ancient artifacts and ancient remains. Among all of these curious discoveries made by Glidden was the most bizarre of all. His claim that he had uncovered a race of giants who had once inhabited the island. He came forward to announce that during his excavations, he had come across several skeletons across the island that were far larger than normal humans, measuring an alleged 7 to 9 feet tall. This, he would concoct into a theory that the island had once been inhabited by a race of fair-skinned, blue-eyed giants with the average height of a full-grown male estimated as being around 7 feet. But Glidden wasn't the only one to make such gigantic claims. In 1913, a German man named Dr. A.W. Furstenon had found the skeleton of what appeared to be an 8-foot-tall human on Catalina Island, which was found amongst other artifacts, including a flat stone bearing odd, unidentifiable symbols. This particular skeleton was allegedly found in Avalon Bay in hard black sand, and it reportedly mostly disintegrated when it was brought to the surface and exposed to air, leaving only the skull, jawbone, and foot intact. There was also a later report of a dig on nearby Santa Rosa Island that in 1959 supposedly unearthed several 7-foot-tall skeletons with skulls painted red, which had double rows of teeth and 6 fingers and toes instead of just 5. Interestingly, double rows of teeth were apparently a common feature among the human remains found in the Channel Islands. Another of the Channel Islands, San Nicolas Island, was also the scene of numerous findings of larger-than-average human remains, which were surmised to be a different race from a more normal-sized human. And considering that many of the alleged giant skeletons of Catalina Island were claimed to have been buried in a ceremonial fashion in elaborate urns, Glidden surmised that the local natives worshipped them as some sort of gods. Now, of course, the findings themselves were viewed with open skepticism and even contempt by the mainstream archaeology community. The whole thing was seen by scientists and academics as a last desperate attempt at a publicity stunt in order to drum up some funding for the cash-strapped Glidden to do more digs. And as such, no professional archaeologist was even willing to travel out to Catalina Island to make an effort to verify some of his claims. One of the main problems with Glidden's fantastic discoveries is that there is very little hard evidence to show that any of what he said was true. There were those who came forward over the years to say that they had personally seen the skeletons, but these stories are circumstantial at best. Some of the bones were apparently sent to the University of California and the Smithsonian, but these institutions have repeatedly denied any such specimens in their collection whenever they are asked about it. Nevertheless, it has been speculated that they are indeed there, locked away in some top-secret vault, along with the field reports and photos to go with them. Regardless of whether any of this is true or not, none of the alleged skeletons has ever officially been released as evidence, and it is unclear what happened to all those supposed remains. One would think that Glidden would have taken many of these photos of these findings, and apparently he did, but these have proven to be hard to come across. Not helping matters is the fact that Glidden was said to be rather sloppy about marking or properly filing his photographs, meaning that many were mislabeled and even lost. The most significant discovery made in recent years was a dusty box found in the back of the Catalina Island Museum's archive in 2012, which held numerous documents written by Glidden and photographs of ancient native relics and remains, including some that reportedly show the giant skeletons he claimed to have found. But these, too, are not always properly labeled and have very little information included with them to give them any context. While it is in dispute as to the veracity of these giant photos, one paranormal researcher, you know him, L.A. Marzulli, has claimed that the details analysis of one of the photographs shows that the skeleton pictured in it seems to be real, and that if it was real, it would have measured 8.5 feet tall. Yet, others maintain the photo is a hoax. Marzulli has also said that one of the giant skeletons clearly shows 6 fingers. This is a common trait, like we talked about, among these giant skeletons that are found. The condition, known as polydactyly, has actually been seen in humans. And, speaking of the world champion Cubs, they actually had a relief pitcher that had this trait. Antonio Alfonseca, who played for the Cubs, had 6 fingers on each hand and 6 toes on each foot. If you think I'm making it up, check it out for yourself. And like we talked about earlier, another trait that's commonly found is the double rows of teeth. Crazy, right? So, let's say you accept the fact that many years ago, there was a race of giants that inhabited planet Earth, and we somehow killed them all off. What was responsible for the giant size? Remember, lots of things were giant long, long ago. From giant cave bears, to giant sloths, to even, yes, Luke's favorite, dinosaurs. Everything seemed larger in our distant past. So, is it possible that they were just like us, only much larger? Maybe. One of the most interesting theories as to why people were giants all of those eons ago is because of cosmic rays. In Peter Colosimo's book, Timeless Earth, he said that there has been and will continue to be much animated discussion of the nature and effect of cosmic rays. Years and years of experiments will be necessary before firm conclusions can be reached. Like other radiations, such as wireless telegraphy, X-rays, etc., cosmic rays may have 2 types of effects. They may cause mutations and the changes in inherited characteristics, and also they may damage or alter many of tissues. It is true that the Earth has had moons that have been destroyed in the past, and if the result has been to increase the intensity with which human beings are bombarded by radioactive particles, this may be certainly a contributory cause of the phenomenon known as gigantism. Montpellier explosion of 1902 on the West Indian island of Martinique, which in the city of St. Pierre alone caused some 20,000 deaths. A dense cloud of purple gases and aqueous vapors were emitted by the volcanic crater and were seen drifting over its summit and toward the populated regions of the island. Then, a pillar of fire blasted forth from the volcano to a height of 1,300 feet, setting the gaseous cloud ablaze. The mass of fire and vapor, burning at 1,000 degrees centigrade, obliterated the entire population of the island, except for one convict, who was protected by the safety of his prison walls. The city of St. Pierre was razed to the ground. Nothing remained of its former glory, and the city itself was never rebuilt. However, life did return to the ashen ruins sooner than was expected. But it was life on an immense scale. You see, plants and animals grew to an exceptional size. Mammals, reptiles, amphibians, and even spiders and insects were of considerably larger size. Giants, in comparison to their smaller predecessors. These mutations were attributed to intense cosmic ray-like radiation that gathered deep within the volcano. During the immense volcanic explosion, radioactive material rained down upon the unsuspecting island inhabitants. Indeed, humans too were affected. Now, Colosimo states that the director of the research center there, a Dr. Jules Gravuret, became 2.5 inches taller, and his assistant, Dr. Rouen, aged 59, grew by about 2 inches as well. The radiation released by this volcanic eruption had been hidden deep within the planet since the beginning of the planet itself. Some mainstream scientists readily accept the cosmic ray theory with regard to gigantism because it is known that gigantism in both plants and animal species spearheads evolutionary change. Radiation causing mutations of gigantic proportions also was widely rampant in the movies of the mid-20th century Hollywood, films haunted by the real possibility of an atomic catastrophe. But these calamities are far from fictional, far from merely a theory. They really happened. Colosimo writes, "During the first phase of its existence, the sun must have poured forth a stupendous volume of radiation on all of its satellite planets. Even today, the intensity of radiation goes hand in hand with the occurrence of sunstorms." Colosimo further speculates that gigantism must have been a feature of life on Earth from very early times, and not only the Triassic period, which began some 180 million years ago. This was an age of great prehistoric reptiles and the dawn of the first dinosaurs, which succeeded the more primitive mammal-like reptiles and super crocodile species. But in an attempt to fairly evaluate the full extent of the influence of cosmic rays on planet and the animal gigantism, he admits, "Cosmic rays, it is true, are filtered through the Earth's atmosphere, which must have been much denser in earlier times, but it can hardly have been so dense as to affect radiation greatly, since at the present day, rays of this type traverse the human body in incredible quantities, some 650,000 to the minute. They can penetrate massive walls of lead or seawater to a depth of 3,500 feet. The conclusion is, then, that cosmic rays would not in themselves have sufficed to create a race of giants, though they may certainly have helped to do so." So I don't know. I don't know what caused there to be giants back in the day. And I don't know if the Smithsonian, as well as other groups, spent a lot of time trying to cover up the discovery of giant skeletons. What I do know is this. Whenever I hear people, native to a particular area, talking about their ancient past and things that went on there, I tend to listen. Perhaps you should do the same. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. We're back with Expanded Perspectives. I love the stories of giants.
These damn giants.
I love the daydream that back in the day, there was these giant people walking around. I don't know why I'm so fascinated by that, but I am. Every time I see it in a newspaper, every time I see Jim Vieira writing something about it, or Hugh Newman, or any Patrick Coenard.
I know why.
I love the sightings.
I know why you're fascinated with it, and the little people, as I am. Because, like we've talked on this show before, it's because of our fascination with things like Lord of the Rings and Dungeons and Dragons and all, is because it fits that genre type. The idea of having mortal men and the dwarves and then the giants living in certain areas, that's why you're fascinated with it, is because that's the world that you are drawn to. Just like there's people that are drawn to UFOs and aliens because they're more sci-fi. That's the world they're drawn to.
Yeah.
It fits into your wheelhouse. That's why you like it so much. Like, you and I have laughed and spent hours watching all the videos on, like, Ralpartha figure painting, and you start finding all those because it's fun to have.
What was the show I told you about, the guy that makes
Dwarvenot?
Yeah, those kits.
Yes. I can't help it. I'm drawn to this stuff. It's something that I enjoy. That's why I love the Game of Thrones. I mean, that's why I love the whole, that's why I'm drawn to it. That would be a thing that I wished I could do. If I could do one thing in my life, would be an extra or something like that on one of these movies, to be involved in a film like that.
You could definitely I think it would be cool. A dwarf or something.
Yeah.
Beard and everything.
Yeah. I'm real short and thick. I'm built for it.
Did you see the movie King Arthur?
Yes.
Is it any good?
Multiple times. I enjoy it, but I enjoy that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I almost rented that
You'll enjoy
night,
it.
And we almost rented Wonder Woman. But then the boys got busy, and they decided they didn't want to watch it with Dad. So
you'll like King Arthur.
Yeah.
Hands down, you'll enjoy it.
And I also saw on there recently the Lost City of Z's on there, so I almost rented that.
Same dude, yeah. Same dude.
That
so,
looks
yeah.
very interesting. Well, are you going to go see the new movie, It?
Yes, of course. I think we're all going.
Okay.
Because I think my wife's going, and your wife's going, and of course we'll be going. And then I think your sister-in-law's going. There's a whole bunch of us that's supposed to go watch it.
And there's been a lot of articles about it, like I mentioned on the Elite show last week. Apparently every time this series comes out or this movie comes out, it actually hurts legitimate clowns. Like
yes.
they can't book any gigs for a while because all the kids are terrified. I mean, Luke... He just saw a trailer the other day, and like it didn't even really show the clown. It showed some balloons in the eyes.
Is he not having it?
And he was like, I don't like that.
I'm not having this.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they also said that that's going to be the this Halloween's most, I guess, popular costume.
Oh,
be
I believe that, yeah.
So I could imagine that. And they also started saying that you're going to see these sightings of clowns everywhere, like last year. Remember that?
Yep.
Various spots in the United States. Although, I don't recommend you doing that. You'll probably get shot.
Yeah, that's not a real smart thing to do. So, yeah, be real careful with that. Especially any place that's like open or concealed carry states. You don't want to be hopping out or standing around there looking with something sharp, standing all creepy. That's the best way to let the light into you.
Yeah, I would not do that. Let's talk about our sponsors real quick. ZipRecruiter. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. Right now, our listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/expanded and use our promo code expanded. Also, Dollar Shave Club, for a limited time, new members get their first month of the Executive Razor with a tube of Dr. Carver's Shave Butter for only $5 with free shipping. After that, razors are just a few bucks a month. You can only get this offer exclusively at DollarShaveClub.com/expanded. That's DollarShaveClub.com/expanded. And finally, Gaia. Stream thousands of videos at home or on the go now by going to Gaia.com/expanded perspectives. And your first month will only be 99 cents, but you have to use our code. That's all one word, folks. Gaia, GAIA.com/expanded. Perspectives. If you have a story of your own or news or whatever, you can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 817-945-3828, and you can follow us on all forms of social media. Cam, what do you got planned for your week? My short week.
I'm at the beginning of the month. It's going to be really good at work. Everything's going to be really smooth. I'm going to be very, very confident and positive. And disc golf. We're playing disc golf.
That sounds good to me, man. I think I'm going to go out in the field and do some field work later today. But
you know what we need to do? This is what we need to do. We talked about it. This is what we need to do. We need to get some discs, because I know we've got a lot of listeners at play, because every time we talk about it, I get these emails. I'm going to get some discs with our logo printed up on it.
That'd be sweet.
Dynamic Disc does them, the Dymax logos, and they'll put your logo where it'll look just like the one on the show here on the disc.
You can get whoever you want on there. I'm going to get like Nick Redfern put on a disc,
yeah,
and stuff like Lyle Blackburn.
I'm going to get Count Lyle jamming out on one of my discs when I throw it. Yeah, but that's what we're going to do. We'll end up doing. We'll put our logo on something.
That sounds cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, for you Elite members, we'll be speaking to you again next week. For everybody else, we'll speak to you next Monday. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale.
Peace, y'all.